This is Brownfield's Year in Review 2017. We welcome comments from you at brownfieldagnews.com. In 2017, one Brownfield story topped all others for audience response. It's about how pizza maker Domino's stood its ground in the face of activists. The reaction was high in volume, and it's still coming in. Brownfield's Ken Anderson explains how the story came about.
The Domino's story originated from an interview we conducted at the Animal Ag Alliance Stakeholder Summit in Kansas City in early May, in which Domino's Pizza spokesman Tim McIntyre talked about why his company has chosen to stand its ground in the face of extreme pressure from animal rights activists. McIntyre told us their philosophy is simple: farmers know best.
We will never tell a farmer how to farm. We will never tell a rancher how to raise his or her animals. What we believe is that they're the experts. They have the most vested interest in raising their livestock.
In recent years, animal rights groups have been very successful in pressuring many of the top food companies and restaurant chains to adopt stricter animal welfare policies, such as cage-free eggs and gestation stall-free pork. But even though those groups, which McIntyre referred to as extremists, have pushed hard on Domino's, McIntyre said the pizza chain will not cave.
Over the years, because we have taken the tack of what I call leaning into the punch, and we've taken the punch and sometimes we punch back, that we've been lucky enough to see that the extremists will go away when they realize that we are not going to cave. The biggest mistake we make is believing that they are reasonable people. And we've learned that they're not. That's why they're called extremists.
Livestock and other ag groups welcome Domino's strong stance. In fact, the Animal Ag Alliance designated June 2nd as Thank You Domino's Day and encouraged farmers and others to order a Domino's pizza and post a picture of it on social media with the hashtag FarmersThankDominoes. For Brownfield's Year in Review, I'm Ken Anderson.
And I have Ken on the line right now from our office in Lincoln, Nebraska. Ken, you mentioned extraordinary reaction. How did the farm community react to this story?
Tom, for many people involved in livestock production, these comments from Domino's were a real shot in the arm. To hear somebody at the national level like this speak positively about farming and the way that farmers raise and care for their animals. As we noted earlier, for many years, many of the major food companies in the U.S. had succumbed to pressure from the animal rights groups to require stricter animal production practices. So it was a very positive response from the agricultural community. In fact, the Animal Agriculture Alliance designated June 2nd as Thank You Domino's Day, and the alliance encouraged those in agriculture to order a Domino's pizza, take a picture of it, and post it on Twitter and Facebook with the hashtag FarmersThankDominoes. So there was a lot of celebrating going on.
And not to leave people with the impression that all of these comments were positive either. There were a lot of people who do not agree with the Domino's stance on this, and they made it known.
You're right, Tom. There are a lot of people, mostly outside of agriculture, who think farm animals are being mistreated on a regular basis. And also, there's another group who think even the process of slaughtering animals and eating meat is wrong. And so this strong stance by Domino's generated a lot of comments from those who disagree with that stance.
And these responses continue to come in.
Yes, they do. Even up to the end of the year, it's still one of the most widely read stories on the Brownfield website, and people are still responding both positively and negatively.
Thank you. Brownfield's Ken Anderson. Not a year passes without some natural disaster wreaking havoc on everyone, including farmers. Producers are far too familiar with the destruction Mother Nature can leave in her wake. Nicole Heslop reports that in 2017, she left a trail of ashes in several states.
Texas Ag economist Steve Amason told Brownfield ideal growing conditions in 2016 left much of the landscape covered with grass that eventually dried, creating a high fire risk. The biggest fire in Texas was the third largest in the state's history. Emerson said it burned almost 320,000 acres after electric transmission lines caused a spark.
It's like watching a Christmas tree go up when these conditions exist. Just poof. It took a week to get that one under control.
He estimated wildfire damages of more than $25 million, as more than 500,000 acres had burned in Texas. Similar conditions in Kansas and Oklahoma on March 6th charred more than 1 million acres in less than a day. Colorado wildfires burned 30,000 acres. Fires in Kansas were the largest in the state's history, burning more than 700,000 acres. Oklahoma State University Extension valued economic losses of more than $16 million from the 310,000 acres that burned in that state. As quickly as the fire swept across the High Plains, relief efforts were underway from ag communities near and far. One of the many volunteers was Matt Schaller, a truck driver from Michigan, who coordinated convoys of supplies for farmers and ranchers in need.
It's just something that you want to do for your neighbor, and I know that when you have the ability to help somebody, I've always been taught that you want to do that because you never know when you're going to be the one in need of help.
Brownfield spoke with Montana ranchers in early August after wildfires moved through. One of the fires consumed more than 270,000 acres, including 15,000 acres of grassland on the Travis Brown Ranch.
It's going to be a huge challenge to work through in combination with the worst drought that I've ever seen. This is going to be character-building times in eastern Montana.
With Brownfield's Year in Review, I'm Nicole Heslop.
While unusual dryness resulted in wildfires, farmers in some parts of the country dealt with quite the opposite. Hurricanes pummeled the U.S. Gulf Coast. The first U.S. farmers to see the tropical storms were those on and near coastal areas south of Houston, Texas. The Texas Farm Bureau lent a hand coordinating help and donations. Communications Director Gene Hall talked to me before all the damage data was compiled.
We do know it's bad. There's never a good time for a hurricane to hit, but certainly the harvest season or the end of the harvest season for two major crops is probably the worst time. From an agricultural perspective, the cotton crop was nearing completion. A lot of farmers had cotton still on the stalk. You've got to consider that a total loss. Maybe even worse than that and harder to get a handle on is the cotton modules. You know, Tom, that farmers will pound the cotton into these large modules. Many times they throw a tarp over it and wait for the gin capacity until they can deliver that cotton. We know of several instances where the tarps were blown away, the wind blew the modules apart, the rain and the flood water pretty much ruined it. It's unlikely that any of that can be salvaged. Just as the city of Houston expected flooding, but not like this, I think it's safe to say that a lot of ranchers were caught by surprise as well. So I think you can expect some significant cattle losses, but I really don't know any way to put a number on it right now.
Texas Farm Bureau Communications Director Gene Hall. For much of the 2017 growing season, Minnesota was the envy of most corn and soybean growing states, with crop condition ratings at or near the top nationally. And while overall yields were impressive this fall, the harvest was nothing to be envious of, as Mark Dorenkamp reports.
Michael Pettifish, a farmer from Claremont and president of the Minnesota Soybean Growers Association, says overall, the harvest went well.
I think if anyone could offer you this type of year at the beginning of the year, I don't know a farmer that wouldn't sign up for it. There were some challenges, and obviously it was a slightly protracted year as people took harvest past the normal cutoff dates. But all in all, it was a good year.
The USDA is forecasting record high soybean production for Minnesota at nearly 400 million bushels on an average yield of 49 bushels per acre. The forecast for corn, 1.38 billion, is 11% lower than a year ago, with a statewide average yield of 183. Minnesota Extension corn agronomist Jeff Coulter points to weather as a key driver again this season.
Yields were exceptional in a lot of places in southern and central Minnesota. In western Minnesota, particularly in west central, and even more so in the far northwest, it was very dry, particularly kind of near the pollination period, and that had an effect on yield. The harvest was, later than many of us would have liked. It was wetter. It was challenging, but we're through it, and I'm optimistic about 2018.
In Minnesota, I'm Mark Dorenkamp for Brownfields Year in Review.
Despite a challenging growing season, farmers in Indiana and Ohio say yields were better than expected. Mike Beard raises corn, soybeans, and hogs in central Indiana.
Been rewarding in the fact that the yields were not as discounted from the later planting as I thought they might be.
Southern Indiana farmer Ben Crone attributes his good yields this year to fungicide application.
There was a lot more fungicide spread this year because we had a really bad southern rust last year, so that really helped our overall crop health.
Roger Hadley, a northeastern Indiana farmer, told Brownfield he originally thought they were going to have yields that were 15 to 20% below normal, but that hasn't been the case.
The beans were surprising. They were about what you'd call normal, which is better than we expected.
Southwest Ohio farmer Nathan Brown had record yields this year.
I'm going to say that our corn is probably going to be 10 to 15% above average.
Anthony Bush farms in central Ohio. He told Brownfield he faced setbacks this fall with a small combine fire and weather delays, but he still had good soybean yields.
We've seen crops range anywhere from 50 to 70. Our overall average is going to be a solid average. We're happy with that.
I'm Amy Seitz on Brownfield.
In June, an Illinois farmer told Brownfield showers moving through the Midwest brought much-needed relief to his corn and soybean crops.
What we see out in the countryside, you just see everything. You'll see a beautiful field of corn that's virtually knee-high, and right next to it will be a cornfield that just got planted.
Doug Schroeder told us 2017 had been a challenging year to farm so far. He said after a cool, wet start to the growing season, crops near his Champaign County farm had less than 3 inches of rain during May. In October, a West Central Illinois farmer was about half done with harvest and told us his yields were good.
We're pleasantly surprised. I wasn't sure we were going to have the kind of yields that we're pulling out, but it's been a pleasant surprise.
2.5 inches of rain the Saturday before made Ron Moore switch to harvesting corn for a couple of days earlier that week in October. Moore said it was pretty dry in his area near Roseville, Illinois, at different times during the summer.
I felt like it was going to damage our yields, but boy, they're doing real well right now.
When a Northwest Missouri farmer was on the tail end of corn harvest and about halfway on soybeans, he told Brownfield his yields were about average, saying his growing season was typical for Missouri.
It's either feast or famine. We're either waiting for it to rain or waiting for it to dry up. And this year we had major events of both.
Rick Parra said the peaks and valleys of weather are what make this an average year.
We just hope to hold everything together and get a play again next year.
I'm Julie Harker on Brownfield.
A wide swath of South Dakota suffered from severe drought to the degree that forced Western South Dakota ranchers to bring cattle to auction sooner than they'd normally be sold. Market owner Thor Roseth told Brownfield in June that there wasn't enough grazing area to support cattle.
A lot of the grass is sure drying up. Some of the pastures that rely on dams are unusable right now as well due to little runoff. So there's sure a lot of area that the carrying capacity is greatly reduced.
And while many South Dakota farmers were devastated by drought, others had too much rain. East Central South Dakota farmer Paul Casper.
July 18th, it started raining, and we've had over 30 inches of rain up to the end of September. We had a lot of water.
Casper's corn yielded 175 to 185 bushels to the acre, which is better than he expected. The year in review, 2017. Let's talk about commodity markets. We bring in John Perkins, commodity market reporter on Brownfield Ag News. John, just in general, I know that some of the markets were affected heavily by planted acreage. How did that work out?
Well, Tom, the crop production year for corn and soybeans started out on a bearish note because of planted acreage. Record planted area here in the States this year for soybeans and another big crop for corn, even if planted acreage was down slightly from last year.
You mentioned a big crop, and a lot of this has to do with the number of acres that were planted. But I think people were surprised, too, by just sheer production.
Absolutely. And big planted acreage this year definitely played a part and helped to offset some of the weather concerns that we saw here in the United States throughout the growing season. Weather was inconsistent, but there was enough planted acreage and yields turned out well enough, it appears at this point, that we've got, you know, the third largest U.S. corn crop on record and record soybean production.
I see this consistently with soybeans, corn, and wheat, especially on wheat. When we see bearish supply figures for wheat, how much did just the supply and the carryover contribute to some soft markets?
Tom, it absolutely contributed a great deal to the weakness that we saw in the commodity markets this year, especially when you take into account the extra competition that we've had on the export markets from South America. Big U.S. crops and big South American production have led to some pretty bearish numbers throughout the course of the season and new contract lows late in the year, at least for corn and wheat.
All right, John, I'll put you on the spot. What are your feelings about the coming year?
Well, at this point, it's not official yet, but a lot of the trade and the early USDA projections seem to imply that we're going to be planting another 90 million acres of both corn and soybeans this year. And wheat planting might end up being the lowest on record here in the United States, but we should still see some pretty substantial acres overall.
Brownfield commodity market reporter John Perkins on the year in review. At this point during the program, I'd normally call on Jerry Passer, who retired this past year. This year, Megan Grebner has taken the reins of Brownfield livestock market reporter. Megan, what's your feeling on the market?
I think the biggest story is that production continues to increase. And not by a little bit, a lot. I think some of the things that we're watching and interesting things to point out from that is that feed costs have been lower. It's helping to support not necessarily rapid expansion, but continued growth in both the pork and beef sectors. And it's also helping, while those prices maybe have come down a little bit, keeping some profitability on the livestock side of things.
So let's talk about domestic demand. Where has that taken us as far as livestock markets are concerned?
Demand has been strong, especially domestically. And month by month, for the most part, we continue to add jobs, which helps support demand and helps support prices at the same time.
How about exports? How's that been driving demand for livestock?
We only can have so much demand domestically. And if we're looking as production is growing and we're looking to grow markets and we're looking to continue to grow our production, we've got to find a place to put it. And exports have been huge and have played a huge role in that and will continue to do so, I think, as we look into next year and the year after that and the year after that.
Do you have anything to say generally about how you see livestock demand in general coming up for 2018?
I think demand is going to hold strong. I think that domestically, we're still seeing a lot of our product being purchased here, but we've got to continue to look at some of those other countries, and not necessarily even Canada and Mexico, the countries that already buy our products regularly, but look to new markets and look to expand market access for U.S. beef and pork in other countries.
Megan Grebner gets the last word in our year in review for 2017. As is usually the case, there's not enough time during the program to cover all of the stories that we'd like to cover. Thank you to all the Brownfield anchors and reporters who have helped bring this program to you. I'm Tom Stever, Brownfield, Ag News for America.